It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And for all of you who are driving to a destination somewhere so you can spend the rest of the day outside, we don't blame you.
No, it is beautiful out there.
This is about as good as it gets. So wherever you're going, make sure it takes an hour to get there, and you'll be fine. You hear the whole show. How's that?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, so if you're going someplace close, change your plans. Anyway, to all the regulars, welcome back. Thanks for always being here. You're the reason we get up and do this on Saturdays. And if you're new to the show, driving to your destination or whatever, listen in as long as you can, hopefully the whole hour, and I promise you, you'll learn something or other. Not ever quite sure what it'll be, but one thing you do know for sure, we'll talk about what we want to talk about unless you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That is, after all, the purpose of doing live radio, so that you can get your 2 cents in or get your questions answered or whatever's on your mind on a beautiful Saturday morning like this. There's always a lot to talk about this week. No exception. It was a wild ride. We were trying to describe it through a window to Angela before she was signing off on the last show. It's not easy to describe this week with your hands.
It was easy to describe the first part.
Yes.
It was awful.
Just point straight down.
Yeah. Sometime around Thursday, midday, the market decided that it maybe had enough, and it recovered from Thursday's losses almost 100%, not quite fully, but really close. I think maybe the NASDAQ ended the day positive.
It did, little bit, 6 points or something
six
like
points,
that. But
right.
That color green was hard to recognize after the days and weeks we've had lately.
And then the futures on Friday morning were green, and the market stayed green all day for once, and it ended up really big, about up 450 plus points on both the Dow and the NASDAQ.
Yeah, I told Adam early in the morning, just watch, it'll be negative before noon.
Yeah, and I was in total agreement.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What can you say when you have recency bias?
Yeah.
It does this every darn day for weeks, but it didn't.
Nope, for once it didn't.
Now, what does it all mean?
Nothing. I mean, really.
You're probably right.
It could be wiped out on Monday. We don't know. The market's been so volatile. You're seeing 2% moves intraday all over the place.
Yeah, in fact, we're going to have a trivia question about this week's volatility, which should open people's eyes a little bit.
Yeah, the market is it's really in a foul mood right now. And it all has to do with interest rates. I'll get to more on that later. But all of the indexes, the three main ones, were down between 2.1% and 2.8% this week. The silver lining, though, is we saw strong buying into the close on a Friday. I have not seen that. I know it's happened this year, but it had to be in March.
Been a
long
time ago.
Yeah, I would guess it was in March the last time we saw that. So a little bit of a silver lining. And a lot of that buying was in riskier assets, which have been just pummeled lately. I'm talking about, if you are familiar with the ARK ETFs, Kathy Wood is the manager. She's been in the headlines a lot for having the best performing ETFs in 1 year, followed by the worst performing ETFs in the next. And
so what happens when you make a big commitment?
Yeah, and she's doubled down and tripled down and quadrupled down on her bets, and man, has it been painful for them. Their flagship fund is down about 70% from its highs. And
she made another big commitment this week. I can't remember what it was, but I disagreed with her completely.
Yeah, Coinbase was the most recent one.
Okay.
She tripled down on Coinbase, I think. But on Friday, all two of their ETFs, at least that I looked at, were up over 10% on Friday alone. So that is a big indication that there was a lot of risk on buying on Friday.
Things are just too cheap.
They really have gotten crazy.
I mean, we use the term oversold because it's the jargon, but what it means is all this stuff is cheap.
Yeah.
If you're not buying, I don't mean jump all in, head first or both feet or whatever, but it's certainly time to pick up some little bargains here and there while you watch.
Yeah. Oversold is just relative. It's cheap relative to where it was recently. That's all it means.
Yep.
So it doesn't mean that it's cheap from a long-term perspective or even that it's a good bargain. It just means that it's a heck of a lot cheaper than it was a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So why is the market going down so much? And if I had to pin it on one thing,
just to irritate me,
I would say inflation. That would not be the answer.
No.
Inflation that's the easy answer. But the truth is, the economy is really complicated right now. We have indicators that the economy is strong, but at the same time, we have the Fed actively trying to cool it down. We have wages rising, but we also have prices rising faster than wages. Jobs are plentiful, but people are not working. There are signs that inflation and supply chain issues are improving, but there are also signs that consumer demand is slowing. So for every pro, there's a con, and investors are not sure which one will win out in the end. And so if you really had to point to a reason that the market's doing what it's doing, what does the market hate? Uncertainty. What is this economy full of? Uncertainty. And
and what percentage of the people are predicting a recession?
I don't know the exact figure on that.
I don't either.
But it's high.
It's high.
It's really high. But the thing about recessions is they're not easy to predict.
No.
And when most people think that a recession is coming, it's usually not when it comes. It comes when you least expect it. I think a great example is the COVID recession.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a recession at the peak of what everyone thought was the good times rolling. And it was, until it wasn't. And all of a sudden we had a very fast recession, but as soon as it started, it ended. So I don't know. We might be in a recession right now. I sent out an email on Thursday that said that. It's very possible. We've already seen one quarter of negative GDP growth, and all it takes is two consecutive to be in a recession. I would not place a bet either way on what the second quarter comes in.
Even though the last quarter, which was down over 1%, it's more explainable than most. It's still down.
It is down.
And you can't redefine a recession and expect all of Wall Street and the investment world to just, oh, okay, well, that's obviously smart, so we'll just change what we've done for 100 years and we'll say that you're right.
But
that won't happen.
And then what's so confusing is that if we do see a recession, at least half of it will have been caused by strong consumer demand.
Mm-hmm.
That is not historically what causes recessions. But it really did drive what we imported last quarter was way higher than what we exported. And there's a number of reasons for that. But mm-hmm. but at the heart of it really is strong consumer demand in the United States. And you're seeing so many examples of it. I was talking to a client yesterday who wanted to drive to Ohio and take his RV up. And every single KOA campground between here and Ohio and the one he wanted to stay at in Ohio all booked solid.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's not like it's Memorial Day yet either.
Nope. Last month, U.S. casinos booked their best month in the history of casinos in the United States. $5.3 billion they made. Who goes out gambling when the economy is terrible?
I guess you sell out all your ETFs and mutual funds, put the money in your
red,
car.
Bet on black.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many of these examples where everything just is not lining up. For every pro, there's a con right now.
That's called pent-up demand from being pent up.
Right, but still, this is not behavior that people have. You think back to the Great Recession. People were not gambling. People were not traveling in their in their $200,000 RVs and buying $5 gas. I mean, it's just...
It's ridiculous.
It is. And one of the reasons oil is so high is because demand is off the charts right now.
Yeah, big time. Okay, we got to take a quick break. We'll have the trivia right afterwards, so don't go anywhere when we wrap this up. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And we'll hit the phones in just a second. I want to give out the trivia question in case somebody wants to take a guess. So we talk a lot about volatility. You've heard Adam say many times that in a week or a particular day or anything like that, if it doesn't move at least 1%, he considers it kind of a non-entity.
It's a flat day. I call it a flat day.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this week, we didn't have things like flat days.
No.
On Wednesday, the NASDAQ reversed direction over and over and over. And each time it did, it went kind of large in one direction. Then it would turn around and go large the other direction. How many times did it reverse and move over 1% before it reversed again? So how many times in one day did that happen? Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you?
Yeah, I was I was glued to my screen that day, and I'm going to guess three times.
Well, you're low, which tells you a lot, doesn't it? I will tell you one thing, though. I can give this part away because of your guess. Three times that it turned, it moved more than 2% before it reversed again. And that is unbelievable.
That's a lot of volatility.
That is. But anyway, overall, the overall number, more than that. What else is happening?
Yeah, do you, I mean, it looks like the 10 years is stabilizing a bit. You know, we got up to 3.2, I think, and now we're in around 2.9. Do you think that that is probably the peak, you know, because there's a lot of talk about peak inflation and maybe the next CPI report in June will show maybe it'll come in below expectations for maybe July. That's my thinking, is that pretty soon we're bound to hit it. Somebody on TV was saying that the last 24 CPI reports, only three times has it come in below the expectations. So yeah, that's not good track record.
We did that for a trivia question or a point of interest or something about 3 months ago on the show. That's an interesting stat.
Yeah, we were actually just, I don't want to say arguing, we were having that discussion during the break, and I think that inflation will come down, and you are a little less certain on that.
The younger you are, the more likely you are to be an optimist.
That's true.
And the older you are, and I am considerably older than Adam is, especially for my young brother, you know, but I am, of course, getting to the point where I'm not that optimistic. And what I see built into all of this, I don't see what incentive or impetus is going to be to come down at all sharply, because unless we control energy prices, that's kind of controlling the board to me.
But that's the same reason that I would argue the other way. So
you think energy prices will come down?
No. Well, yes, I do eventually, but I think that energy prices are high, so it's dissuading people from driving this summer, taking trips.
Not campers.
Well, not right now, but it will eventually. And you look at things like automobiles, and rates on car loans have gone up, and people have been, and the free money game is done. So I think that demand will slow for used autos. I think it will slow for new autos. I think that airline travel has gotten very expensive relative to history. I think that that will dissuade people from flying. I think all of these things, the 5.5% 30-year mortgage, I think that will dissuade people from buying houses. Not everyone, but those on the margin will make the decision to not do things. And I think that will contribute to prices falling.
Is that agreeing with what you are thinking, Chuck?
Yeah, I mean, demand destruction. I mean, the cure for high oil prices is high oil prices, like you guys have always talked about.
Yeah, that's right.
Oldest saying in the book, because it's absolutely true. But that doesn't include corollary A. If you've got the most deaf, dumb, and blind and idiotic administration in world history, it might take longer. That's corollary A.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, will that contribute to higher oil prices for longer? Yes. But all those other things are consumer decisions that are made without any influence by the government, more or less.
Well, we could raise taxes. That would certainly help.
No.
Well, okay.
It's really hard. Speaking of insane administration, I mean, where do you begin? I mean, we could talk for 2 hours, but here's something that you guys probably have never thought of that I was thinking about this morning, and that is, if you look at the Biden baby formula shortage that's going on right now, I was thinking about this the other day. There's around 4 million babies born in this country every year, so kids take baby formula, I guess, up until about age 2 or so. Mm-hmm. And then you got all these pregnant moms out there. So let's just say there's 12 million babies that are either affected now from the shortage or will be affected once birth. So that's 12 million angry moms and dads out there. That's 24 million adult parents that are scared to death that their baby's going to starve to death let's just say 30% of those people are undecided voters, the Republicans are probably going to pick up a net of 8 million new voters in November just because of the angry mob out there of adult parents that are scared to death that they can't find baby formula. And so that's a net positive from a very, very bad situation.
It is, and that is a demographic that both parties have been going after like crazy. The suburban moms are one of the most coveted groups by both political parties. So it's not the group that you want to tick off.
No, they vote, a lot of them.
Yes, absolutely.
Big time. Yeah, it is Trump's fault, though, of course. You know, it's that super mega, ultra mega group. That's they're trying to explain away every dumb thing with things like that. That it just proves my point that I have never seen a group of people so deaf, dumb, and blind to what's going on. Biden decided to talk about the baby formula thing because it's on the front page of all the papers, not because there's 4 to 12 million mothers out there who can't feed their kids. That wasn't the reason. It's because it's in the newspapers. My God, people, wake up.
Anyways, we're getting off topic here.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
But it's still, that's contributing to inflation also.
You know, my point is what you guys have always talked about. You don't want to talk about politics, but if you're a young mother and father, you realize now, if you've never thought about it before, that politics does affect your money. Your money and your politics are interchanged. They're tied together. And this is, I've never seen money and politics so correlated like they are right now.
How about 1 million acres in Alaska being taken off the drilling possibilities? You think we're going to get anywhere on lowering the price of energy down here? Another, what, 40,000 or something in the Gulf? They do everything they can to restrain supply, which means energy prices are going to go up and up and up, as they have been every day. And I don't see how that comes down. And that is just so inflationary. And, of course, I'm about to say it's going to slow the economy down, which I guess plays right into Adam's point.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you could make an argument either way. But we do know that there is a point where people will make the decision to not drive that drive or not buy that product, and we've got to be close to it if we're not already there.
I know it's affected my lifestyle. If I have to go to Publix or something, if I'm going there and Trader Joe's, probably going to work them into one trip now, even though it's real short. It's just the general principle of having to overpay so much. Think about it if you're commuting. Wow, that's awful.
But again, if you want to know why the market's volatile, there you go.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely.
But do you all think that maybe we have seen the bottom? I mean, with Apple hitting 139 on Thursday afternoon, and I got out of my foot on the queues just at that time. I said, there's no way Apple's going to continue to just roll down the hill. I got out of my foot on the QQQs right at that time, you know, even though I mean, it was just lucky. But I just figured, oh, this is enough is enough. 139 on Apple. You got to be kidding me.
I agree.
I think people have come to the same conclusion, which is kind of what we were saying in the first quarter, that it's just enough is enough. If things get dirt cheap, what are you going to do? You're going to buy. And yields on certain things go up just so high, you're going to buy.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Chuck. Would you rather get a 10-year bond from the United States that pays – let's see, the U.S. 10-year is at 2.918, or would you rather get a 10-year bond from Spain that pays 2%? Which is a better deal to you?
The U.S.,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, but does that make sense that Spain's 10-year bond is priced almost a full percentage point lower? Is there that much more risk in the U.S. 10-year than there is in Spain's? Does that make sense?
The currency exchanges?
I don't know.
Based on that, I honestly don't know. We were talking before the show and in the break about how little sense we can make of all of this. There's so many things that are providing cognitive dissonance out there. It's very difficult to choose a course and believe in it. So if anybody out there is feeling confused, you're in really good company. Plain and simple. So, all right, we got to run. I appreciate your call, and we'll see what happens this week, won't we? Okay, we got a lot to do when we get back. I would love to be a lot more definitive about certain things right now, but to me, you just can't say for sure that it's over yet. It might be anywhere Monday. Let's see. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. I believe I forgot to mention it's sponsored, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. How many times on just this past Wednesday alone did the NASDAQ reverse direction and move over 1% before reversing again? And we know that 3 is too low, because it did that, and out of the 3 times, it moved more than 2%. But it reversed many more times. How many? Just wrapping up a little bit on the market wrap, there's one indicator that is really hard to not consider when you're looking at the true chances of this economy going into recession. And I think Adam has that specific little review for us.
Which are you talking about, the current beat rates?
Yeah, the current conditions in business as exemplified by the earnings season.
So last quarter was actually a really strong quarter. You may not know it by looking at the market, but right. The beat rate for companies reporting earnings, it's over 70%, and on revenue it's even better at over 72%. So yeah. Those historically are very, very solid numbers. Yep. And guidance has been good.
Yeah.
Not bad. It definitely isn't bad.
And it had been going into that quarter, too. So it wasn't right. Like we were shooting over a low bar or anything like that. So, and business is good.
The amount you're not hearing about that it's almost criminal. They're not talking about it. It's you only hear about the negatives. And
yeah, but corporate America is bad, remember. They're bad.
Well, not
they overcharge.
Jesus. I don't even want to get started on that. But The other thing that is a little bit of a bullish signal is market sentiment. It's still showing extreme bearishness, with levels around the same as they were in March of 2009 and February of 2015, which was right before the last rate hiking cycle. And forward returns after times like these, if you look 1 year out, it's the strongest returns for any time period, just based on level of bearish sentiment. So this time could be different. It always can be, but it's usually not. So that's a little bit of I keep that in the back of my mind when I'm feeling really bad on the negative days.
Sometimes you have to.
The other interesting thing that happened this week was in crypto. So you know that if you listen to the show, you know that we don't actually own any crypto, but we follow it pretty closely because it's somewhat of an emerging asset class. I'm not sold on it. In its current form, I think it has a place in the world. I don't know exactly what it is. I love blockchain technology, but I don't necessarily love crypto. And whatever your feelings are on it, it was a wild week in crypto.
Wasn't it?
I know when I wasn't in the business in 2008, but you were, and you always go back to the day that you pinpoint when you should have realized that things were bad is when the money market broke the buck.
Yep.
And what suddenly
money, it was actually in September of 2007.
Money market funds were suddenly worth less than a dollar, which they always had been, and that was a sign. Well,
if it had never happened before, people like me who were in the business would have been and things would have moved a lot faster. But it had happened before, mm-hmm. in 2001, 2002. Somewhere in that line. And what happened then was the big guys that held these money funds, the Vanguards and the Schwabs and so on, they put their own corporate capital into their own money market funds to prop up the $1 per share value. It seemed very logical to me. Okay, we got another blip just like the other one. They're just going to throw enough money at it to keep one. No problem. Move along. I was wrong.
Yeah. Something similar to that, sort of, happened in crypto this week. There's something called stable coins, which
not
are
anymore.
Supposed to be pegged at a dollar or something like that. And they broke the buck. And man, did the crypto market exploded on, I think it was Thursday. there was 20% drops all across the board. There was some recovery after that, but wow, it was pretty wild ride. We saw on Friday, we saw Ethereum rally 11%, Bitcoin 7%. But Bitcoin did hit a low around 26,000 this week, and that's down from a peak of somewhere around 60,000. So I think today it's somewhere around 30,000. It's still half of its peak, but not 26,000 either. So it's pretty
nothing,
crazy
week. Nothing compared to Luna.
Yeah, one of them was down 99%. Yeah, something like that.
A little over 99%.
Okay. Like I said, I don't follow all of them that much, but there were – I think over $1 trillion in market cap was wiped out in crypto this week. It was a lot of money.
Algorithmic stablecoins designed to be a buck, just like that money market thing.
Right.
How can something designed to be worth a dollar go to a fraction of a cent?
Yeah, I don't know.
Quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. That is true.
So then the parent company, USD whatever, I don't know. I don't pay attention to these things very much. But they decide they're going to buy a bunch of Bitcoin and put it in that account to prop up the value of their stablecoin. So you're building a stable base with three legs of a stool, one of which is crypto, and it doesn't – never mind. You can talk yourself into circles on this. If you're in it, I hope it's money that you can lose and not – cry yourself to sleep.
Yeah. And the basic problem for me is that I can't, there's no way for me to value a Bitcoin.
No.
What formula would you use to put a fair value on it? It's much more like art. So
yep.
When you have a Picasso, everyone agrees that the value is whatever the highest bidder is willing to pay for it. That's the value. Bitcoin is somewhat like that because there's no other way to value it except that the market agrees that right now it's worth about $30,000 if you own one. But tomorrow, that could be different. And so for me, that's not something to invest in. And it's certainly not something to put money in to store value because it could all be wiped out as we saw this week. So anyways, that's my thoughts on crypto.
I'll give you one more.
But I don't hate it. I just don't think that
here's one more.
An investment right now.
A little factoid, crypto factoid. I've got a million of these things. Crypto hacks have occurred 37 times in 38 weeks. The dollar value that's been stolen is $2.9 billion. So those of you who believe that if you've got a crypto account and your blockchain, that it's uber safe, 37 times in 38 weeks and what is missing is $2.9 billion because thieves got it.
Wow.
So if that's your idea of playing it safe, then I pity you. Absolutely. You're not listening to the show enough, obviously. Or you got so much money, you just don't care.
Yeah, I doubt that. You usually don't get that much money by not caring about money.
No. And as I think it was John D. Rockefeller said, if your only goal is to get rich, you'll never succeed. How's that one?
Okay. The only other thing I wanted to mention from the market wrap was that inflation is definitely on the minds of small business owners. In more than 35 years of the NFIB Small Business Optimism Survey, inflation has never ranked as high on the list of problems as it does right now. And that's pretty telling. I think that's
pretty telling.
Yeah. And also the PPI this month was on target. It showed prices up 0.5% as expected. Producer prices are up 11% versus a year ago. That ticked down from 11.2 or something last month. And that 0.5 number follows 3 months of 1% increases. So it was actually half of what it was the last 3 months. So going in the right direction, but not fast enough.
Yeah, but there's another underlying thing, too, that I haven't brought up yet. You have we've been doing this a long time. We're in year 8 now, and several times when we were talking about the consumer price index, we explained that they have this thing called the core CPI, and then there's the CPI overall. And the complicit media in times like this will always pick the one that makes the administration sound better. So they came out this week and used the 0.3 number. The 0.3 number was really a 0.6 number. So they added in the food. They gave it the overall, and that was right. 0.3 was the overall. But the core CPI was up 0.6. That means even when energy prices start to come down and food prices start to come down, it's all the underlying things that are still driving inflation faster than they're willing to admit. And that's one of the things that has given me so much pause in trying to predict what's going to happen. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back again. But first, I want to congratulate America, and there's air quotes around that. You have just gotten Chairman Powell for another term. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. How many times on Wednesday alone did the NASDAQ index, the composite, reverse course during the day? This is a 6.5-hour trading day. How many times did it reverse course and move either up or down by 1% or more before it did the same thing? Again, we know that 3 is quite a bit too low. All right. I mentioned the Chairman Powell of the Federal Reserve. He was just approved again by 80-some votes. So I won't even try to explain that to you. That's just what it is. Now, they've got an idea. This is how they're going to fight inflation. You ready for this one? If you're not sitting down, you should.
Who's they?
They, the Fed. This is their way of saying, okay, they blame the labor market. Because what's happening now is there's so many jobs open, and there's so many people quitting and taking new jobs, and so many people who are trying to get hired, and so many people who are getting hired, on and on and on, that they say that the overall shortage of labor relative to jobs available, which we call the JOLTS, and where are we now, 11.5 million?
I think open. This is the first time in history that there's been 2 open jobs for every available worker. Okay.
Well, their concept to nip inflation in the bud is to implement a hiring freeze nationwide. And no, you can't make this up. Good morning, Bosco.
Morning, y'all.
What's happening?
Another great show.
Thank you. What's happening?
I'm just curious. You know, y'all usually keep a pretty close fingers on the tab of, say, maybe livestock. And I was curious, you know, you would think that with this baby formula going south, what they do before baby formula, I mean, you know, if you look at what could be a fantastic investment, it's milking goats. You know, each one for each home.
Yep, that's absolutely true.
Much better than cow's milk.
Yeah, there was somebody a couple of years ago that said, if you really want to give somebody a great present for Mother's Day or whatever it is, get them a goat.
Yep. And grew up on that. Grew up on that stuff.
I don't know if it's less allergy prone. I'm not into agriculture enough to know, but a lot of the problems with the formulas is a lot of babies are born with allergies to something or other, which is why there are so many different formulas. And I don't know if goat's milk is tolerated by a great percentage or not.
That was the post I was just reading you by. One of my friends on Facebook was saying that they can't get the goat's milk formula that they need for their very medically needy 3-month-old.
So it's probably one of the least.
It must be.
Allergenic or whatever the term is. Yeah, well, I'd invest in goats, except the greenies probably want to get rid of them, too.
Well, you could get rid of, you know, with the EPA, you know, you can get rid of lawnmower because you got a goat.
Right.
Right?
I like it.
You're going to turn around and, you know, kick out that milk from the grass that's being consumed, you know. And before long, you know, the neighborhood's going to grow out of the goats, and then you'll have a petting farm.
And they're kind of cute, aren't they?
Yeah. We literally grew up on goat's milk. You know, I mean, you know, we were young enough we could ride these goats, you know, and goats don't get very big, you know.
Right.
And, you know, it's got a tremendous amount of fat. You know, the cow's milk, the Swiss cow, the brown cow, is the milk that generally is what people are not allergic to. It's the black and white cows are the one that people are generally allergic to that, I want to say enzyme. A1 something that black and white cow generally, you know. But when milk is processed, it all goes into one big vat, you know what I'm saying? sure. And it's hit and miss, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just, you know, my thought, you know.
Guernseys and Herefords just, and all, you know, they're like the great melting pot.
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, you know, you get out in some of these states like California, you can buy raw milk, but, you know, you got to do the pasteurization process. We never did any of that. You know, we just had to skim off the fat because, like I say, goat milk is so much more good fat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, we know about goat cheese, you know.
Sure.
How it's the rage, you know. And, of course, look at the price tag on it.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know.
All right, so. People, you've got it now. We want to solve two problems at once.
There it is.
And it lends new meaning to getting your goat, I think.
But after your name, you're called goat.
Do you want to take a shot at the trivia before we go?
I want to say six.
All right, six. Too low. It was a wild
Still
day.
Too low.
Yep, it was a wild
day. Well,
wild.
We like him. The old Chinese proverb, Chinese proverb said, may you live in interesting times.
Yes, a pox upon you.
Yeah.
May you live in interesting times. And boy, do we. Good to hear from you.
Truly.
Take care of yourself.
You betcha. Hasta luego.
Okay, bye. Yeah, it's funny. It is a good idea, though. And they are getting popular. Goats are making a big comeback.
Goat yoga is a thing now.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're done, you milk it and feed your baby.
I guess.
Anyway, this whole thing about it, they want to make it a voluntary hiring freeze. The Fed is sort of begging business. So if they came to me, and I'm struggling to even keep my business where it is, we'll say, because we lose people and you have to keep paying them more and you go look for people and they don't show and on, all the problems that everybody's having today. And say implement a hiring freeze, I would have to say, I can't implement a hiring freeze. I can't fulfill my orders today. So then they go over to Adam and say, will you implement a hiring freeze? And if he's a competitor of mine, he's going to look at him and say, yeah, I'll do it after he does it. And this whole thing's going to go around. I think this is one of the dumbest suggestions I've ever read in my life, and that's going some. So
that just where did you get this? What is this?
It's from Yahoo Finance.
But that's not a source. That's they just.
Well, it's a collector. I don't know who actually wrote it. Let's see. Bank of America. They're essentially rooting against the home team and hope numbers stop being so strong as higher wages contribute to America, to inflation. So basically this came out of the Bank of America people, apparently. And I shudder to think what some of these people think. But then I've read other things about Bank of America, too, that make me just as unhappy. Oh, here's one. This is really unusual. You know, topics like abortion and race relations and all that, they're usually pretty much taboo. But this is very interesting, and I just thought I'd throw it out. There is a recent study that's been done. It was done from Schwab, actually. And they talked to investors of different races, black and white normally, probably some Latinos in there, too. But they found that 64% of black investors prefer to work with a financial advisor of the same race, and only 47% of white investors showed that preference. 59% of black investors prefer to work with an advisor who is the same age or generation, compared to 43% of white investors and 53% of black investors who prefer to work with an investor of the same gender, compared to 40% of whites. And they seem to be just astounded by these numbers, and I'm not. I mean, the underlying reasons are very simple. They want somebody who shares more of their life experience, that they think they can communicate easier and better. It's not just the numbers, and I don't find it at all unusual, which is why I encourage constantly females and people of other races, if you like people and if you like numbers and you're fond of money and all those things, this is just a great occupation, and there's room for way, way, way more of those people out there. There's more of us, too. And, you know, we treat everybody the same, but that doesn't necessarily make them comfortable. But if you got a young kid showing spunk, or if you're a young kid wondering, what should I do when I grow up, and that fits you, the whole idea of working with people and with their money, then I just can't encourage you enough to go start getting some training to do exactly what we do. Just something I thought was kind of interesting. You got anything else you want to pour in before the music gets too loud?
Don't think we have time, so.
Okay. Here's a parting thought for you. The IRS is so far behind on processing returns, and it's especially true in the paper returns department, that they did find a unique way in March of 2021 to lower their workload and so they could catch up. They destroyed 30 million paper tax returns, and all of a sudden, their backlog virtually disappeared.
Whoops.
Now, if you filed one of those, that's all I can say. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Go out and enjoy the day. This is the Banway Financial Hour.